This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
So we have opportunity for questions. We have the roving microphone, and please don't be shy. I know I'm asking you to stand up for the cameras, but and give us your name and where you're from. Who would like to start us off? Okay, we've got one just there. Thank you.
Hi there, Chris Wixon from the website Rate My Placement. We're kind of sat in a position between employers, universities and students, and it does seem that there's a lot of students out there and a general perception that students and graduates are struggling to find jobs and, you know, they can't find opportunities. And then we've got employers on one side, as Gary said, who actually aren't filling their roles. So my question to, open question really, whose responsibility do you think it is to actually help that pool of students to sort of connect and bridge that gap between the opportunities that are out there and actual students, you know, who are looking for them?
Okay. Gary, whose responsibility is it?
I think it's a shared responsibility. Ultimately, it's the student's responsibility because they're looking to get themselves a job. But as employers and universities, both sides have got a role to play in helping the student through that process. It is a difficult process. I can still remember my job hunting process in 1991 when I graduated, and the job market was really tough. And I relied on the support of colleagues at university to help me through that. So ultimately, it's the student who's looking to get the job, but the university side and the employer side have both got a role to play. And I think the three presentations you've heard today have hopefully shown some of the ways that that can happen.
Donna, whose responsibility is it?
I would agree with Gary that it is everyone's as well. I think everyone really has a role to play. Academics, universities, career services, of course, but I think other departments within the university. And, of course, employers by having the jobs initially. But being out on campus, being available, and really kind of mentoring people. I think, you know, I see us doing that a lot within our recruiting teams. And someone may not be a good fit for our company, or they may not have the competencies, but we still want to help them find something. So we work really collaboratively with a lot of employers to share candidates and say, you know, gosh, we're going to pass on you, but have you looked at so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so? And I think it's, you know, employers, again, working much more collaboratively together to help students get jobs. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, that increases our brand name out on campus, or increases our brand name with students. And from our point of view, the brand is really important, because students are people who come and apply to us. They may or may not come to work for us, but they're also a potential customer. So I think that's really important. We want them to feel good about that.
Just picking up on that, I can imagine some academics might take issue, for example, what you said, anyone who's only seen the inside of a library is not going to be top of your candidate list. But actually, for the academics, people who spent 3 years in the library, that's exactly what they want them to do, isn't it? So is it really the responsibility of academics to make sure that students come out suitable for you? Or actually, their job is to get them to be experts in that subject, isn't it?
Right. Well, I think there is a responsibility for academics in the curriculum that they teach, by providing coursework that's exciting and interesting and applicable to the world today. You know, doing a case study from 1992, you know, versus doing a case study of things that are going on this year, and making sure that the coursework is interesting. And oftentimes that does involve bringing in external speakers or people who can lead case studies. And so I think there is a role for business to play. I think sometimes academics get a little bit concerned, ooh, an employer's coming in, oh, we don't want a recruiting message. And I don't think I don't think employers who are interested in doing that or willing to do that or who do that sprout a recruiting message. I think it's, you know, let's talk about what's happened in the last 2 years in our business and, you know, apply it to the things that you're learning in class.
Okay, I mean, and Julie also put a bit more spin on that question about responsibility. You said you dealt mainly with, was it 13 or 30? I wasn't sure.
Universities. I mean, we have an open graduate recruitment program. You
right.
can apply from wherever.
Yes.
But there are 30 universities that historically we've been very successful in finding our graduates from, and so we put more effort into those campuses than we would into others.
So I can imagine what people out there might want to say, well, what if they're not one of those 30? What can they do to get you more involved? And particularly if you're individual students at those universities, what can you do to improve your chances?
Well, I think there's a number of things. I think our as I said, everyone in our firm gets involved in graduate recruitment because they're all graduates who've been recruited. So they're passionate about the firm and they're passionate about the university that they came from. So you find that there are probably Deloitte campus teams on most university campuses. And they will do a whole raft of things. And I absolutely agree with you. I think one of the things that we don't do as well as we might is help the academics and the students to understand what's the relevance of the degree that I've done to your business. So zoology, you know, I did go through the civil service and became an accountant and then became a consultant. But actually, fundamentally, when I say, oh, I did zoology, I tend to get a little eyebrows raised and, oh, how is that relevant? And I said, well, animal behaviour is actually quite useful in the boardroom. So, you know, there are skills and there are things that you pick up, and it's about helping students and it's about helping universities to understand the link between what they're doing on their course and the skills and the competencies and the behaviours that they're learning or they need to learn and how they can apply that. I mean, I loved your story about the valet Parker, and I, you know, you could translate that to a whole raft of conversations that I have with graduates who just don't get how you explain what you did personally, the contribution you made, and why it's relevant in the world of work.
Okay, thank you. I've got a question over here, then we'll come over there. Yeah.
Oh, hi, my name's Frances Trout from London South Bank University. Just a quick question, just building on from what you just said, Julie. When you were speaking before, you mentioned about the 320 UCA points in terms of the application process, and that sifts out a number of applicants. I mean, for our students, we do get them to the 2-1 first point, but when they come in the door, they don't have the 320 UCA points. So how can we get them over that barrier in terms of if they wanted to apply to companies like yourselves or enterprise? Because at the end of the day, they do have the skills when they graduate, but they don't have the skills, the 320 UCA points.
That's a good point, isn't it? It's almost penalising them for the sort of school experience that they may have had or early family experience. Yes.
Coming into higher education, so, you know, they come from very different backgrounds.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you, and I think when I was what I was trying to say there, you know, historically, I mean, we are in a very privileged position as a business, because for our 1,300 applications, we'll have 20,000, you know, places, we'll have 20,000 applications, so we can be choosy. But what we have recognised is actually we are cutting off a whole cohort of potential talent from even getting through the door, which is why we're starting to look at different routes into the business and different ways in which we could do that. Now, this is an early, you know, this is over the last 12, 18 months, we've been starting to think about the diversity of the workforce that we have. And we don't do anything at, you know, from the point you come for interview to the point you join the firm and as you go through the firm, we do nothing that would suggest that we are excluding one group of individuals over another. But actually, by the very way in which we are taking a view about the choices that we can make right at the front end, I absolutely agree. So the Bright Start programme, which is about school leavers, is starting to address some of that. And we're also looking at, are there other ways that we can do that? I mean, certainly you might not get in as a graduate at that point, but, you know, there are opportunities for experienced hires as well. You know, our staff are a mix of graduates and a mix of people with, you know, a number of years' experience in industry. So we do a lot of work with financial services. It's quite useful for people to come from financial services and join those teams because they know how the business operates much better than someone who's come out of university, gone into a graduate program, and then just become a consultant. So there are multiple channels. I agree, you know, I think it is a challenge. I think it's a fair challenge for organisations like ours.
It could, I mean, more things like Bright Start could actually squeeze those ones out who've gone to university because you're getting the bright ones leaving school.
Yeah,
it's interesting
because
Procter & Gamble are doing something like that as well. And it does seem to be a bit of a trend that more employers are now looking to take on their own people. They may even train them up to degree level through their own internal courses, which is a bit of a challenge to universities. So it's an interesting one.
Well, I did say, apologise at the time.
No, but I mean, I think it's
But you know, at the end of the day, fundamentally, you know, we are a commercial organisation and we have to make commercial decisions. If we were to go to every university across the country and put the same effort we do into the ones where we get the best return, it would be a hugely expensive programme.
Sure.
But I'd be very happy to talk about that later. Offline.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Well, both of you. Or
sorry.
Share question. Okay.
Lindy Blair from the University of Surrey. It's just actually some feedback responding to that. I thought, as soon as you said the UCAS points, I thought we have to say something about
it. Yeah, I knew. I saw it.
It's been going on for years and years and years, and it is very frustrating for example, a female student, for example, who has perhaps had a family come to take their degree. They have not got A-levels in the same way that some of their 18-year-olds are, and we are actively having to almost ring up your recruiters to say, could you accept this person's CV so they can get around the back? The feedback from me to you, sorry, it isn't a question, my apologies, is actually that you are losing out on some of these really good students because they're going to places like Microsoft, IBM, who have changed their policies.
I absolutely agree.
Linda Buckham, University of Sussex. I'm very interested in the comment you made, Donna, about confidence in male candidates and female candidates. And I just wanted to kind of comment in a broader sense on the Delhi data that actually there are more males unemployed at 6 months than females. And I wondered if there are any thoughts about that, about what we ought to be doing about males and unemployment and why it is that young, well, mostly young from the Delhi data, but obviously there are mature students there too. What's happening in your understanding?
I think women are, I think it might come back to the multitasking thing. Sorry, Gary. but I think women are just a little bit more organized and focused, perhaps, in their job search. And it does leave some of the men behind because I'm just looking at the children of friends and colleagues right now that I have that are graduating. And most of the young ladies have jobs lined up. And very few of the men, and I think it kind of goes back to that scattergun approach where they just don't have, I guess they really haven't just taken it seriously. And they think, oh, gosh, I'm great. I've, done all these things. Of course I'll have a job. And now it's really getting to the tail end, and they don't. So I think a lot of it just comes down to kind of the organization and taking it really seriously.
I feel the need to comment there, having
been. <you know. laughs>
Were you able to listen and think of your next answer?
I had to be very careful. This is not based on any science, and it's not an AGR opinion, but when I ran a recruitment program previously, we noticed that male applications were more confident and perhaps more full of bluster on some occasions, and females perform better at assessment centre.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was interesting was to look at and it's a fairly small number, it's not a scientific sample, but the females that came through to assessment centre would often perform better on the day.
Yes, I would.
We just did, Target just sponsored the Undergraduate of the Year Awards, and so we're in the process of eliminating that, and Enterprise sponsored the Management Student of the Year, and the exact same thing. We had over 450 people apply. We got it kind of whittled it down to the top 50, and the majority of the candidates in the top field were women, and they did better than the men at Assessment Center.
Okay, just to finish off, perhaps I could ask each of you to talk a little bit about, both your own company but also your sector. I mean, Gary gave us a little bit of a look at things that seem to be getting better overall, but from your own particular perspectives, how positive are you about the trends for graduate vacancies over the next, let's say, 3 or 4 years? Julie first.
I mean, I certainly from a Deloitte and a professional services firms, I think that there is all to play for. I mean, we are increasing the numbers this year and next. I know PwC, KPMG and others are doing, particularly in the consulting business where all of the firms are trying to grow their consulting practices quite aggressively. There are lots and lots of spaces. And some of the things that I didn't say when I was up there, we do struggle to fill the graduate places we have, and we're looking for people with technology backgrounds, with financial backgrounds, with Japanese language capability around emerging markets. There's a whole range of new technical skills and expertise that we're looking for that we just can't get enough of.
Okay, Donna?
I would agree. I think it's a very buoyant sector in the retail market. I think retail is one of the areas that we didn't see job cuts in the last couple of years as other employers maybe slashed their programs or cut their programs back. Retail was one area that really didn't do that. So I think, very buoyant, definitely from an enterprise perspective. We're experiencing 30% growth this year. That's on top of a 28% growth from the previous year. So lots of great opportunities, and as a company that employs and promotes strictly from within, we invite graduates to join us and join the ride.
And not wanting to ruin that nice upbeat moment, but Gary, what about the public sector, which looks perhaps a rather different picture for graduate employment over the next few years?
Yes, the public sector is having a challenging time, I think it's fair to say. I think there's also a feeling amongst public sector recruiters that they are still looking for good people because the public sector is having a difficult time and maybe the workforce is being, I'm not sure if rebalanced is the politically correct word, but they're having to look at redundancies in certain areas. But I do still talk to public sector employers who are proactively looking for good graduates. I guess it comes back to the point I made about research, about understanding within that sector which organisations are going to be the happiest hunting grounds for a student to look at. But there are certainly still opportunities there.
Well, that's all very encouraging as a father of two daughters who will be leaving university shortly. That's nice to know. Before we change over speakers, can you give a big round of applause to help us ease that transition? Thank you very much. Thank you.